side are you taking the big David Lee Roth Van Halen split?
What do you mean?
What kind of question is that?
What side did you take, Halen or Roth?
Van Halen.
He's a cop.
Oh, come on, guys.
Strictly a judgment call. They sold a lot of records after Dave left the group. Come on, one more question. Hey, come on, Jazz, one more.
Right. Who'd win in a wrestling match, Lemmy or God?
Lemmy.
God.
Wrong, dickhead. Trick question. Lemmy is God.
I want it! Give it to me! I love it!
It is the Minx Cast. Let's have some fun, boys.
All right.
Top shelf, hello, my good friend.
Hello.
The mighty Reverend in Fuego right over there.
Hi.
And everybody's favorite, Mono Nick.
I'm not yet, Rev.
Oh.
Of course. Had to show a little love for Motorhead and Lemmy.
Yeah.
With a great scene from the movie Airheads.
Yes.
No, right? Airheads.
It's funny. I'm very excited. We have we're going to have a couple of awesome guests on from a band that is has a huge impact on my life from back in the day. So I'm very excited. Valerie and Elizabeth from 7 Year Bitch will be joining us. And
woo!
I've been thinking a lot about Motorhead's music. And originally I was going to use some of their music for the Jam of the Week. But then, of course, with having 7 Year Bitch on, I'm like, oh, yeah, we should do them, their music. And I've noticed a little similarities between the two bands, at least personally. So let's start it off. Jam of the Week, The Scratch from 7 Year Bitch. Comparison for me is that you got Motorhead. A lot of people know their one song, Ace of Spades, obviously. But when you actually pay attention to Motorhead, I mean, you just assume, oh, they're just fast, they're punk, and that's it. There's like so many different layers to Motorhead's music. And I feel the same way about 7 Year Bitch. Like, this is a song a lot of people know. It's called The Scratch. It's been featured in, like, movies. It's a song that I think a lot of people that are familiar with their music would be the first song they think of. But when you listen to some of their other songs, it's like they don't just fall into one category. Like, they got the abrasive, the fast, the punky stuff. But then they also got stuff that's, like, just plodding in a good way, like just heavy, you know what I mean? Like, okay. Bluesy and dark. And Motorhead's very similar in that sense. There's a lot of blues behind the music of Motorhead, but we all just immediately think of Ace of Spades.
That one, yeah,
and
exactly.
Sure, the heavy.
What's that?
The heaviness of it.
Right. Yeah. I remember the first time I heard that, I'm like, how is the drummer going to play a whole set playing like that? I can't play that beat. Even though it's so simple for Ace of Spades. But then you hear some of the other songs, like, oh, those are the songs where he gets a little bit of a breather because he's kind of just taking it back a little bit. But I'm very excited to talk to the ladies, the bitches, 7 Year Bitch. That's going to be kind of fun. We could actually just be like, what's up, bitches?
It's pretty cool. This was they came way before I really started getting into music and stuff. So they were a band that I had to go back and kind of retrace their steps.
Yeah.
From like L7 and like Sleater-Kinney and stuff. Like,
okay.
That's how I learned about this band, and it's just
really
cool. Yeah.
Oh, that's kind of cool. Yeah, because it's like a lot of people use Motorhead as that band that like both punk fans and metalhead fans can agree on. Like, that's the band that's kind of like the bridge.
Yeah.
And I've always, especially now that I found out we're gonna have an opportunity to talk to them, it brought me back to high school. Which I'm sure they don't want to hear, because it's like, I hate when people are like, hey, I've been listening to you since high school. And I'm like, well, we're at a bar. How old are you? And like, I'm 30. I'm like, son of a bitch.
That was a while ago. Crap.
But like, 7 Year Bitch for me was a band in the same sense how Motorhead seemed to be that for many fans, that they kind of, like, if you were a fan of Motorhead, it kind of opened you up to whether it be punk or metal, depending on which you were originally on. 7 Year Bitch was like that for me too, because I was like, you know, a fan of of rock music and the Seattle scene was I was enamored with when I first was in high school and learning about all these bands that were coming from that area, whether it be Alice in Chains, Soundgarden. Then I heard this band, 7 Year Bitch, and I'm sure I'll share the full story with them when they call in to give them a little bit of a backstory of why I'm so pumped to talk to these ladies because I heard their music and I heard, I'm like, oh, they're abrasive and they're heavy. And then I'm like, oh, wait, they're not just like your quote unquote, at that time it was like, oh, the Riot Girl scene or L7 or it's like, oh, there's so many different layers to what they're doing that I found so interesting. And it opened my eyes to different music and maybe like, obviously, it got me interested in music that was fronted by females at first. At that time, the only female fronted music I could even think of when I was growing up was like Lita Ford and I mean,
guitar.
Yeah, right. So I was like, oh wow, these guys, I'm associating and I'm connecting with what they're throwing out there way more than Lita Ford ever did. And then I was like, oh, let me check out Babes in Toyland, or let me check out L7.
Oh, that band, yeah,
right, or even Hole. Like, I mean, there's like so many. Mm-hmm. It just kind of opened my eyes. Like, wow, chicks rock. And on a level that I am, like, on a level that I connect with more, which was like, a more raw, punky version. So I'm excited and nervous to talk to them because I'm such a big fan.
Yeah.
And they have an album coming out. This is the interesting thing, and I'm sure we'll talk more about it. They'll probably be calling in about 5 minutes from now. I want to talk about it, but I don't want to like completely like just steal the thunder of talking to them about it. But
yeah,
like,
it's pretty cool,
right? They haven't been abandoned forever. I think 96 was
20 years.
Their last album, and they're not together to play a show. They got back together because a guy by the name of Scott, who worked, I think he ran sound or worked over at the old Club Mo back when it was the Mo Rockin' Cafe.
Way back in the day.
Back when Capitol Hill was rocking. not how it's like now. It's like, it's just hipster central.
Yeah.
He went into his basement, I think, and found discovered all these old tapes of stuff.
Yeah, like 400 recordings or something like that.
Right, of all different bands. I would love to go hang out in his basement for a day and just kind of go through everything just to see what he's got. But the one that stuck out for him was the live recording of 7 Year Bitch performing at Mo back in 1996, I believe it was, or 94 or 96, we'll ask, 1996. And he listened to it and he's like, wow, this really captures the spirit of them. This is when they were firing on all cylinders and, just the sound and the energy. It reminds me a little bit of Kiss in that I've always enjoyed 7 Year Bitch's records.
Yeah, the studio albums.
Right.
Yeah.
I thought they sounded great, but same thing with Kiss. I've always enjoyed them, but a lot of people would say it wasn't until they put out that live record where people realized how powerful of a band Kiss was.
Yeah.
And I'm noticing it too because I was able to listen to the live record this morning. They sent me a link.
Oh, look at you.
Fancy lad.
Yes. Hey. I won't talk to you unless you give me this link. See?
Yeah.
And I typically would like just kind of skim through it, but I didn't get a lot of my work done this morning because I wound up just sitting in the office and just zoning out.
Dude, every time I was walking by or bringing in papers and stuff, you were jamming out to it. And I didn't realize
at 4:15 in the morning, I'm jamming out the 7 Year Bitch.
And it was loud. You could hear it down the hall. Yeah. So I'm just like, oh, yeah, the country guys or the hot music guys are just like, what is he doing over there?
What is going on in Steve's office? It sounds very aggressive.
That's what I thought from the kitchen because I could hear it from the kitchen.
No, I'm like just totally doing zero work. I get it. I get why Scott said, hey, I need, and he created his own record label just so that he could put this record out.
That's amazing.
Yeah, this record.
Right.
Like, not any of the other ones, this one.
And it's coming out on January 16th. It's called Live at Mo. You could get it at either 7yearbitchrocks.com, which it's the number 7, or liveatmo.com. And they're going to be at the EMP. The band's going to be here.
Cool.
Most of them live in LA. That's why they're calling in and not coming in.
Okay.
And so they're going to be coming back to town, which I'm curious. I want to talk to them about that too, because, on our station on Thursday, we're doing 90 something day where we're celebrating the music of the 90s. This band, I mean, was so busy in the night, especially the early parts of the 90s, but the first half of the 90s, I mean, they were touring with the Red Hot Chili Peppers to L7 to Rage Against the Machine in Cypress Hill. I mean, they
got into some movie soundtracks too, I believe.
Yeah, I can't remember the movie. They were featured in the movie too. Oh, now I'm
I'll look it up.
Yeah,
the song "The Scratch" that you listened to was featured in that movie. So
yeah, I had Chris O'Donnell, and I just looked it up. It was featured in the movie "Mad Love" with Drew Barrymore and Chris O'Donnell.
And it's so crazy because like they pretty much play the whole song in the film. It's pretty awesome.
Movie took place here.
Did it?
Yeah, right on Lake Union.
Well, that makes sense to have them perform then, yeah.
I just remember the guy swimming across the lake to go see Drew.
Dude, I don't even remember anything about the movie. Yeah.
Wow.
I have to go back.
Horrible now.
Is it on Netflix?
I have no idea.
Everything is, right?
Maybe. Sure. Internet.
Maybe Riding in the Car with Boys is.
Okay.
Another Drew Barrymore movie.
I remember that one.
I do remember that one. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff I want to talk to them. Also, I mean, I got caught in the wormhole of YouTube watching a lot of their old performances. Came across this bootleg of Eddie Vedder at, I don't know, I'm going to have to ask them because they obviously would know the backstory. They're performing at Gasworks, but it seems like they just like made like a makeshift stage and just kind of
just showed up.
Right.
That's kind of cool.
Right, and just performed, and this is like 1992.
Before Rage Against the Machine did it.
And the video has like them, whoever's bootlegging it, is spending some part of the bootleg on the ladies performing, and other times just focusing in on Eddie Vedder, who's also videotaping it and drinking beer watching them.
Nice.
And then at some point he jumps into the pit and just starts moshing. Right next to a guy who's rocking a Pearl Jam shirt, which I thought was kind of funny. And then after the performance, Eddie jumps on the stage, and I actually have the audio of that, which I thought was kind of funny, just hearing a young Eddie Vedder back in 1992 addressing the crowd of all the people that went to watch 7 Year Bitch and some other bands that they were going to be playing as well. And here's Eddie Vedder just saying what's up to everybody.
Anyways, that's it. Enjoy the skateboard ramp. Enjoy your beer. Enjoy the evening. This is just for you. This is for everybody. This is for people. This is Michael, who owns this property. The city. We didn't need the city. We did this on our own.
All right.
Me and Michael and Beth and Richard, we did it. To register to vote. There's a way on the way out. I mean, do it if you want, but it's your choice. It's your voice. Don't waste it. Rock the vote. It's just right out here.
Rock the vote. Wow.
Right. Do it. Nothing better to do.
Memories.
Nothing better to do. Eddie might sing a little later. I'm still alive. Yeah.
That's like the guy that he was talking about who let them perform there, the Michael guy. He hands them the mic and he just starts singing, I'm Still Alive.
That's funny.
Weird. I they have our numbers, but they just emailed me saying that, that's because I wrote 205. I'm an idiot. area code 205. I'm so stupid. I have their phone number, so we will have to call them. And I think they're, yeah. Here, I'll just hand you the phone. There's the number right there.
Get the right phone number, not the wrong one.
The 415 number.
Yeah, not the 205.
I'm such an idiot. I can't believe I just give them the wrong number and they're trying to call me. They're probably like, what area code is 205?
Yeah, I'll look that up for them.
Oh, I feel terrible.
It's Birmingham. Birmingham, Alabama.
Hello.
Hello, is this Valerie?
Yes, it is.
Hey, it's Steve from KISW.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm sorry I'm an idiot and gave you an area code of 205 on the phone number.
Oh, is that what that was? I didn't even notice.
Yeah.
I just hit the thing. No problem at all.
I guess, apparently that's, where is that, Alabama, you said?
Yeah, Birmingham.
Yeah, we gave you a phone number in Alabama, I guess.
That's like light years away.
Right. Some guy's going to answer. He's like, I'm here for the interview. And he's like, what?
Hey, I'm going to put you guys on speakerphone because Elizabeth is here.
Awesome.
As well.
Very cool.
Hang on. So this is Steve and Kevin, right?
No, Kevin does the metal shop. He'll probably be reaching out to you guys to handle that and also the Loud and Local thing. This is just Steve. I got my buddy Top Shelf, the Rev, and Nick in the studio with
us. What up?
Hey, guys.
Hi. Yo.
So we've been talking for a little bit, and this is Valerie and Elizabeth, the heart and soul of 7 Year Bitch, the rhythm section.
That's right.
I've been sharing my connection to your music and how, A, excited I am to talk to you guys, and B, nervous, because you guys had a huge influence on me growing up, and I was joking with these guys about how I hate when I run into a listener who's, because I've been doing radio here for 17 years, so I meet people who listen to me when they were younger, and then they come up to me and they're like, I've been listening my whole life. I'm like, well, how old are you? And they're like, I'm 30 now. I'm like, gosh, that makes me feel old. But so I feel bad being like, hey, I've been listening to you guys since high school, but you guys had such a profound influence on my musical taste growing up. So it's a complete honor to get to talk to you guys.
Oh, wow, that's cool. Thanks. We can all feel old together.
Yes. Get our walkers out and drink our tea. It's going to be great.
We're 50% there. We're drinking tea right now.
Don't awesome.
But for the hard stuff later.
I grew up in New York, and around high school time is when I first started like hearing about Seattle music, and I was always just a nerd for music, and I was, to bring it back to way before the internet days, I remember getting the old CZ Records like flyers mailed to me, and I would order records based on if the album cover was cool.
Yeah, I remember doing that too.
Okay, so I remember ordering Sic'em and being like, these girls look like they don't give an F, and I want to listen to their music. And the album was perfectly right. I mean, you guys just had that, you know, that energy and that attitude, like, you know what, we don't care what anyone thinks, we're just gonna rock your face off. And from that moment on, I mean, I was obsessed with your guys' music, and I told these guys, I'm like, it's like, we were lamenting on Lemmy passing and just the sadness about that, and the music of Motorhead, and how the music of Motorhead, for a lot of people, whether if you were a punk fan, it helped you bridge the gap into being a metal fan, or if you're a metal fan, it might have helped bridge the gap of becoming a punk fan. And 7 Year Bitch was like that for me. Like, you know, it just kind of opened my eyes to a whole different world of music. And still to this day, when I listen to you guys' music, it brings me back to that feeling. And it's, I'm just so pumped that you guys are coming to town. I'm so pumped that this live album's coming out. I've gotten, like I was telling these guys even earlier, I got zero work done this morning because I got the link at like 4 a.m. and I spent the entire morning, instead of prepping for our show, I was just sitting in the office just jamming out and loving how great it sounds.
Well, isn't that prepping for the show?
You know what? I guess in a roundabout way, you're right. Yeah. So instead of me just babbling about how much
I
love you guys.
Job.
Yeah, I know, right? Isn't that? Just sit on a chair, jam out the 7 Year Bitch. No big deal.
that's really cool, though. Everything you said, like, thank you so much. And, you know, we sorry we didn't get you the link earlier. That was my bad. I was supposed to have that to you guys by yesterday. But
no worries.
The whole comment you just made about the punk rock metal thing is funny because we've been sort of digging through old memories and old photos and kind of going through and like finding some footage of Stephanie. And Stephanie was really like kind of right in the middle of that. Like she was equally punk and metal, but she had more of the metal edge. And then like Celine and I were kind of more punk, and then Liz was more, brought in more metal. So, but Valerie and I we share a Hessian past. Yeah, I definitely had that as well. So you're spot on with that.
Was there one band that you guys could all agree on as being awesome? Like, you know, like, I mean, because you guys grew up together, you guys start, this is the first band, so I would imagine you're young and you're just, you know, how we nerd out about music. Was there that one band that you guys could all be like, yeah, okay, that one is dead on. We love that band.
Like a current band? I think a band that we all felt really close to musically and personally was Neurosis. Yeah.
Ooh, really?
Yeah. Neurosis was a really kind of a pivotal band for us. Bonding early on. There's a lot of bands that we love. Alice Donut. Yeah. Uh-huh. And we could just go down the rabbit hole. But Valerie and I had like Patti Smith. Yeah, Patti Smith. There's tons. There was like dozens where we were all like, we would perv out on them pretty equally. But early on, like, you know, we were all
musically perv out musically.
I was like, I haven't heard that term before.
I like that. I'm going to start using that. It's awesome. Though it might sound weirder if a dude's like, I'm perving out on this song.
Well, I hope you wash your hands afterwards.
Nice. I wanted to say, for you guys, is this a crazy experience that, like, I mean, you're rehashing some old memories, and I mean, I would imagine, yeah, you did your thing, you played your music, you guys have moved on to do whatever else you guys have been doing, and then all of a sudden, Scott Plum is the guy who finds this tape in his basement and decides, oh, I got to make a record label just so I could put this music out, this live performance. Was it just a surreal thing to kind of bring you back to being, you know, in the band again, in a sense?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good way to describe it. It's surreal. I mean, he contacted us about 2 years ago, and it was a little slow going, like, communication, because we weren't all, like, together and communicating a lot about this kind of stuff. So it took a little while to get it running. But then once he got the tape to us and we heard it, it was like, it was really impactful. I think we just were a little surprised by how emotional we felt about it, and how bonding it was after so much time. Like, we definitely felt like it was a gift that was like, because it just came out of nowhere. Like, we'd completely forgotten that we had made
this recording. Never considered doing any kind of live release. It came out of left field, like Valerie was saying. And one by one, we all heard it and we're like, we need to make this happen. This is an incredible opportunity that Scott has brought to us.
Yeah.
And he really understood our band and understands us, our aesthetic, the artwork that he did for the album, the way he mastered. You know, we were kind of limited because it was a tape off the board, so we didn't have separate tracks. And he did such a good job mastering it. And we're really happy that this performance was captured, because it's at Mo. It's at our hometown at the end of a tour. It was a really strong performance. And
and then Lisa was the one that was doing live sound that night, who was our sound woman for many years and our dear friend. And then she ended up playing guitar. The last part of, like, our last few months together, she was our guitar player. So, and then she passed away a few years ago. So it was like this really cool thing to just have. We could hear her sound technique in
her stamp
in
is on it.
Yeah.
Wow. I didn't even know that. That's heavy.
Yeah, it was cool. So it's been interesting and fun and a lot more work than we would have anticipated.
Being in a band, it's not just fun and games.
It takes a village.
Wait, can I backtrack and say something? Because you mentioned that you appreciated that the album cover of Sic'em matched the music.
Yeah.
That's really important. When I used to, before the interwebs, and you would buy an album because it looked cool,
mm-hmm.
and then you put the record on, and you'd go, this doesn't sound anything like the way this was presented to me, and you feel ripped off.
Yeah.
I felt that way. I bought a Madonna 7-inch. It must have been her first or second 7-inch, because she was wearing these, like, ripped-up clothes, and she looked all badass, and it was a female, and I was like, oh, she's so punk. I'm going to buy this 7-inch, and I put it on. It's like, Chipmunks.
Now all of a sudden you're listening to Holiday.
Like, what the? It was probably Holiday. I'm like, is this on the right RPM? Like, what is going on here?
Can we slow this down, please?
Slow it down. It sounds like some weird, like, typo negative song or something.
Oh, that'd be amazing. You know,
I think she should release all of her old hits that way.
I'd be in for that. You know, it's funny. I think about now, the first thing I thought of when you said that, like, buying albums based on the covers, I remember doing that all the time, going to record stores too, and just the one that pops in my head, I remember buying Nirvana's Nevermind because I knew I wanted it because I heard the songs, but I also picked up Mary's Danish. I don't know if you remember that band.
I remember the name Mary's Danish.
And they were kind of like a fun, like, they had a little bit of a punky attitude to them, but they were, and I remember just buying it because of the album cover. And then on the flip side, opposite of how you experienced with Madonna, I'm like, this album's amazing. And I thought it was so cool that I discovered it just because of the artwork.
Yeah. You know, I discovered Sinead O'Connor that way. I just was like, again, I'm drawn, you know, you're not that many female artists that I feel like I could relate to aesthetically or musically. So mm-hmm. Sinead O'Connor is like, okay, here's an album cover with this bald woman on it.
Right.
Who's really young. She looks like an alien. I gotta buy this. And nobody wanted it. It was like a cutout. You know how they would cut off the corner?
Uh-huh.
And put it in the deep discount bin? I bought that Sinead O'Connor record and wore out needles playing that record over and over again.
Yeah.
Just based on the album cover.
And it's crazy nowadays for many people. Here we are, the old people talking. But for some people, it's just the digital world doesn't even matter what the album cover is because nobody's even looking at it. No one's even opening up the artwork and reading all the... I mean, I remember reading everybody's thank yous on albums.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Liner notes, man. Gatefold. Open that thing up and listen to it and, like, pour over all the imagery. And
totally. It was such a huge part of it.
It's so nice that now with vinyl has kind of saved the record store world in the sense of going there and picking stuff out because of artwork. And I'm very glad that you guys are, like, I had the link and been able to listen to the record, but all I kept thinking this morning is I can't wait to purchase this on vinyl. Because
you gotta get the vinyl.
That was
a driving force for us. It's like, we gotta do vinyl, and it's heavy vinyl. It's black, half red. It's beautiful.
Yeah,
I saw the pictures of it. It looks so awesome.
Yeah, it came out great. We were just at Patti Smith for New Year's Eve. She played at the Fillmore, and she was doing the album Horses. And in the middle of the show, she, like, they played all the songs on side A, and then she actually paused in between, and she said, okay, that was side A. And then she made the motion of, like, flipping the record. Like, and you put the needle on, oh, and then she's awesome. Like, and then this is side B, and she played it. It was very, like, poignant and appropriate, I thought.
I love also, cool. I mean, I know, like, some people, like, they like to listen, the vinyl has kind of become the hip thing, but and I think the best part about vinyl right now for me is it's forcing me to actually stop whatever I'm doing and just focus on listening to the music, whereas, you know, with your phones having all the streaming stuff, you could just plug it into your stereo and you're driving and you're multitasking and you're not really paying attention to the music anymore. And with vinyl, like, I sit in the living room, there's no other distractions.
Yep. That's true. That's a good point. I was just talking about this with my husband. And it's like you sit there, maybe you're reading a book or looking at some artwork, but that's the most you're going to be distracted from the music. It's an immediate connection, but then you have to turn over the record. You can't get too far away. You can't space out too much. You got to turn it over.
Yeah, 15 minutes. You got to flip that thing. You know, and it's funny when you mentioned how, like, you guys understood, like, when you heard it too, you're like, yeah, we have to put this out. That's how I felt when I listened to it this morning. I remember thinking, oh, I get why this needed to be released. Especially, you know, I play drums, and so I always have a extra love for the rhythm sections of bands. And
right on.
You guys both being, you know, the bassist and the drummers, man, the drums and the bass sound so huge on this live record, and just
yeah,
I mean, it's
awesome.
It's
Thanks.
I mean, just the rattling of the bass strings. I've always loved just the, I mean, especially like Deep in the Heart on the album. It's just there's just something like you could just feel every note being hit. There's just something really just beautiful about this, about how it was captured.
Wow. That brings a tear to my eye.
Oh, that's what I do. I try and make any guest come on and cry on our schnapps. No, I'm just kidding.
No, that's really awesome, man. Thanks for listening so actively and attentively. That's really cool feedback. No,
these guys were all giving me a hard time. They're like, we kept walking into your office and we clearly saw you doing nothing other than just sitting there listening.
That's awesome, man. That means a lot.
For anyone out there that wants to pick up the record, it comes out on the 16th of this month, and they could get it at live@mo.com or 7yearbitchrocks.com. You can get more information about it. Plus, you guys are coming to town. You're going to be hosting a party at the EMP where you're doing a live interview, also a signing, and that's on Sunday the 17th at the EMP, and it's free for everybody.
That's right, yeah. And the doors are at 1:30, and it goes from 2 to 3 is the interview, and then we'll be hanging out and selling the record and signing it and just shooting after that.
How often do you guys get to, I mean, besides now all the preparation for this record, have you had the opportunity to hang out with each other, or is this what brought you guys back together?
No, we've maintained contact. Yeah, we've stayed friends and in each other's lives actively, but we have been spending a lot more time together.
Oh, yeah, it is ramped up. It is like emails, texts, phone calls, smoke signals, just like, yeah, telepathy. It's all working on all cylinders.
Yeah, which has been great. It's been really good, and it's been great to work with Scott, and we've had a lot of friends come up and help us out, people that were, you know, part of our past that have really come through for us and, like, helped us do lots of different aspects of this stuff, which has been really amazing to have. Like, it's cool to just have connection with your old peeps, you know, and we just, you know, there's some people going through some tough times and everybody's kind of been rallying around. And so sort of that old vibe from those times is still easy to tap into, which has been really cool.
It's a weird, I know for me, like, when I first moved out here, I started in a band, and then we, you know, again, you band, you break up, you try to get back together, you break up. And recently, you know, we started playing in, like, 97. We just started playing together again, just in a practice space, just to see what would happen. And it's like, it's an amazing experience that when you walk into the room with the people that you were connected with musically, it almost feels like you never even missed a beat. Like, I mean,
I know. Isn't that a trip?
It's really weird. I don't know if anyone really can experience that outside of that world. I mean, it's almost like getting together with an ex, but not having any of the baggage of not liking them. Like, I mean, there's something really special about getting together again. It makes you feel young, and it reconnects you with people that you might not have had the opportunity to reconnect with in forever. So it's cool to hear these stories of not only the bandmates, but also the other people that were associated and involved, whether it be friends or,
yeah,
you know, whatever, management. It's got to be a cool thing for you guys to be able to just kind of go down that road again.
Yeah, definitely.
I wanted to ask you a question about I was talking to these guys before we got you on the phone. I kind of fell down the wormhole of YouTube. You know, when you start watching some music videos and then you click on this, you click on that, and I came across this random bootleg of you guys performing at Gasworks back in 1992, where Eddie Vedder from Pearl Jam was there, also bootleg videoing it and moshing in the pit with you guys. And I just was curious, like, because, you know, I came here in 97. I moved here after I graduated college in New York, where I played the living hell out of your music on my college radio station.
Thank you.
It's like so cool to see like what Seattle was like before, because when I got here, it started, I mean, now it's way different, but 97 still kind of had that vibe of being a music city and a community in a sense, but it wasn't like how it was in the early 90s. And I was wondering if you remember that show, the backstory behind it, because it sounded like you guys just kind of set up a stage and just jammed out at Gasworks without anyone's permission.
Looks like it.
Yeah,
too.
I remember it. It was Mike Renquette's party.
Yeah, it was a professional skateboarder, Mike Renquette, his party.
Yeah, he threw the party, and we do remember it, and it's with Stephanie. And unfortunately, I know that clip that you're talking about because I came across it by accident recently as well, and I was so stoked. But there's a big tree blocking Stephanie, so we're trying to track down Eddie Vedder to see if he has his footage somewhere archived miraculously, because his angle would be able to show Stephanie, because we have so little footage of us playing with her. But
yeah,
we totally remember that party. It was super fun, and there was this sort of wild, you know, just kind of, you know, what's the word when you're like unselfconscious energy in the air. Like everybody was just, you know, yeah, there was a lot of new bands playing, and it wasn't like this whole scene necessarily where everybody was like already established. So uh-huh. it was like a real punk rock show where everybody was like, you know, skating and jumping over people's heads and just like mayhem kind of, but
it looked like chaos out there. I mean, one guy just jumps on stage and just starts like dancing in front of you for a second and jumps off the stage.
Yeah, but without people getting too wasted, like people weren't getting like falling down loaded, but like certainly in slightly altered states, but not over the top, you know?
Yeah, I could see it seemed more celebratory than just like a drunken mayhem kind of a fest. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I wish we had played more things like that. They were always so fun. It was kind of like this humongous version of a house party.
Right. And I remember there was a lot of falling asleep on the ramp. Like, I think in the morning it'd be like people covered in coats.
Yeah.
And some people had sleeping bags. Like, did we sleep on a skateboard ramp? Yeah. I guess it was pretty comfortable. Yeah.
You know it's a good night when you wake up on a skateboard ramp. I've been enjoying your you guys' Facebook page, because it's fun that you guys have been active and like sharing some of your old memories. Speaking of Lemmy, I thought it was you shared something where you said when you heard about Lemmy passing, the first thing you thought of was Valerie and the crazy night where he stole her after a show.
Okay, that is classified information.
Come on, you got it, Elizabeth. You put it on Facebook. It's public knowledge now.
I can tell you, I'll tell you a little bit about the story. So we played a show at the Whiskey in L.A., and we didn't know that Lemmy was at the show, but a friend of ours came backstage afterwards and was like, hey, Lemmy was here at your show, and he's hanging out next door at the Rainbow. Do you want to meet him? And I was like, yeah. she took us over there, shook me over there, and I just left this note for Elizabeth on my drums, like, can you handle this for me? I'm out. and we went over, and I was really nervous to meet him. I remember hanging out outside the Rainbow, because I had, like, I don't know, there was, like, some ID situation where they wouldn't let me in or whatever. And when I finally got in, he was sitting at, you know, his usual spot, apparently, which I didn't know, at the Ms. Pac-Man game in his, uh-huh. like, white leather boots, like, playing Pac-Man. I was like, holy, that is Lemmy. I mean, I know for people in L.A., it's not a big deal because they would see him there all the time. But for me, I was like, it was.
We just saw him not that long ago, actually.
Yeah. And then he invited us back to his apartment, where we just ended up hanging out. It was totally PG and innocent. There was nothing, like, you know, devious as far as any sexual activity or anything like that.
Sorry, guys.
But it was, but there was lots of other maybe not so PG activity that I won't elaborate on.
Nice.
But I did get to hear lots of great stories from him, and he showed us like amazing old video clips, and he played some new songs from the album. I can't remember what album it was right now. One thing that was a little sad was that he was lamenting the fact that the Bastards record hadn't sold well, and he was really frustrated with the music industry, and he was talking a lot about that at that particular time. But But other than that, he didn't, you know, he wasn't in the, that was the only negative thing. Everything else was just a Lemmy-esque evening, and there was other details that I'll leave out because those wouldn't be appropriate. But, but like I said, nothing
pervy.
Yes. The word of the day.
It's been a trip because, you know, after he passed it, everyone shared on their Facebook pictures with him. And I'm like, I feel like every one of my friends has gotten a picture with Lemmy. And then it dawned on me. I'm like, wow, that's just such a testament to who Lemmy was, that he was so accessible to people who appreciated his music, that anyone who seemed like if you had a will to meet him, you were able to.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, he was totally down to earth and, like, just super cool that way.
Well, I even saw on Facebook, I think we share a mutual friend in Jana who was security over at the Showbox and
true
sweetheart, one of my oldest friends out in Seattle since I moved out here. I remember meeting her, and she's always been great to me, and she shared her experiences, and it was kind of similar to your guys', like, hanging out with him, and it wasn't about, like, him trying to, like, you know, mack on anybody. He was just, I think he just, it sounds like he was just the type of guy that just loved hanging out and BSing with people.
Yeah, and I saw that, you know, Danita put on the L7 page about Lemmy being a long-term supporter of, like, women playing music, and it's really true, you know? I mean, he came to our show. It was like, what, didn't know, you know, that's from Adam or whatever, and just his history with Girl School, like, he played tons of footage of Motorhead playing with Girl School, and just, like, I feel like he always, he never made an issue about it. He never was, like, saying, like, oh, I support women or something. He just did it, and it was just in his attitude. He was like, of course, women are rocking this as hard and playing. It was just sort of...
That increases the rock by 50%.
Yeah. Right. When you got the Lemmy stamp of approval, you're solid. Well, and for you guys, too, I mean, in the 90s, it was a little bit... I mean, it was a lot different. I mean, here's a band that's, you know, I mean, it wasn't many female, you know, all female bands, at least in mainstream world. And here's you guys, and I mean, you're on a major label. I mean, it had to be just a surreal thing that you guys were doing something that a lot of people weren't really used to.
It started to feel like in the 90s, it was rapidly getting less and less weird to be in an all-female band, or to be... Because we did have the Year of the Woman. What year was that?
The
that
Year
we had?
Of the Woman.
We had a year.
We got a whole year,
we did.
Man.
We got a year. I think it was 1996. It's been all downhill.
I bet it wasn't a leap year. They wouldn't give you that extra day, would they?
I'd see 92 also, was right.
A 92?
92 was the Year of the Woman.
Was that deemed by Spin Magazine or something? Or
The Senators of the United States.
Oh.
Probably, yeah. Probably like Hallmark's idea.
Yeah, right?
Government approved.
You guys got to play some... Like, our station on Thursday, we're doing a thing called 90-something Day, where we're celebrating the music from the 90s and just from all different, you know, styles and all that. But and for you guys, do you have a favorite memory from your time being a band, touring? I mean, I look at some of the bands you guys got to play with, and it's so eclectic. I mean, from Red Hot Chili Peppers to Alice Donut, like you mentioned, to Rage Against the Machine and Cypress Hill. I mean, just all across the board, having guys like Eddie Vedder always supporting you guys and being a part of the scene with you guys. I mean, what was like some of your favorite memories from your time in being a band?
We have a lot. We've got a lot, but we've been thinking about it lately because it was asked of us, you know, so we could put up some memories on Facebook, which is really fun to share. But I don't know how much we can say on this podcast. Are there children listening?
Typically, no.
We try to make sure that they...
I mean we're a PG-13 base, I'd say. Like, you know, we try not to scare anybody off, but, you know, don't hold back.
I'll just speak between the lines and say that we played a show up in Alaska with Lost Goat, an amazing band from San Francisco.
Yeah, that should be featured in any 90s retrospective.
Yeah, super great band. And, the promoter was in his late teens or early 20s, and his parents, this is in Anchorage, Alaska, his parents had a vacation cabin on this lake. Can I tell the story?
Yes.
Yeah, but I'm
not sure. Yes. You've already
started. If you have to ask, yes.
Yeah, I don't think, have you ever answered no to that question?
Right.
Well, it's the land of the midnight sun there.
The land of the midnight sun. So... It's not going to be too bad, Dolly. So I just want to say that we were up there having the greatest time with Billy Anderson, who engineered and produced our last record. You might know who this guy is, Billy Anderson. He's produced a lot of great records. Anyway, him and Lasco and us were up there. And so we go to the promoter's parents' cabin, which is, I don't know what he was thinking. Let's bring a bunch of bands up to my parents' cabin.
Nothing will go wrong.
And we had a bunch of delicious mushrooms with us.
Oh,
and,
awesome.
So we had a lot of mushrooms, and we went to the store and bought all this food. Like, we're going to, like, we are going to make a huge feast. And but what happened was we ate a bunch of mushrooms, and then he had jet skis. So we took out the jet skis.
Sounds like a Meatballs movie.
Which is like daytime, pretty much.
Oh, yeah.
And man, that's a great memory. We actually, someone just recently let us know that there's footage of this. That's our next project, is to track down some of this footage.
Wow. That is a documentary I'll watch.
It'll either be presented or destroyed.
I can't even imagine being on a jet ski on mushrooms.
No.
I have a hard time functioning. Just like the times I've done mushrooms, which has been quite a few, but I typically just sit in a couch and just like want to listen to music just to calm me down and beg God to get me off of this high, because I promise I'll be good from here on out. Like,
we probably thought we were going really fast, but we were probably going really slow. Well, we could have started too.
I bet the engine wasn't even on. You're like, we're flying out here.
Turns out we just sat on him at the dock.
Turned out we were just in a bathtub with like a little rubber ducky. Oh my God! Did you know all the other people? Like, because I mean, that's a drug that you don't want to go into with like a bunch of strangers.
No,
that was definitely with our friends. Lost good.
This was a tight crew.
Yeah.
Okay,
we had each other's backs for sure.
Yeah,
we did. We did play with like lots of. We were fortunate to play with so many different varieties of bands. It was, you know, and different kinds of tours. I mean, we always were, you know, we played club tours. We didn't do like big festivals. We played like a few one off shows in festival type settings, but that wasn't our world. So we were, you know, hitting like the smaller.
That would be our preference.
We did a couple of tours in big places. We did the Rage Against the Machine tour. That was in big places, and that,
yeah.
And then the Everclear tour was in sheds. I didn't know they called them sheds, but that was a shed tour.
And that was an appropriate term for them. But they weren't our favorite places, nonetheless.
No, but there's one good thing about shed tours is that there's usually golf carts.
True. That was always fun.
Yeah.
Oh, you can have a lot of fun on those things. Yeah.
Almost as much fun as a jet ski.
Okay, we were all tracking on the same level. Yeah. Seems like low chance of injury on something like that.
You'd think.
Yeah. But the cool thing about doing there is some cool things about doing these big shed tour things, and one of them is if you're one of the first bands, then you're relaxed. You're done pretty early on, and then you have the rest of the time just get in trouble.
Yeah.
And goof off.
And see other bands play.
Yeah, and watch the other bands play. So it's pretty fun.
Oh, I bet. That must have been a great time.
Yeah, we've seen Rage Against the Machine play like so many times, and they were such a consistently amazing band live.
Yeah, they really were.
I know, what, like, yeah, 94 is around when, I mean, that's like, geez, man, that must have been such a great treat to be able to witness, and such a powerful band.
And
it was Royzen, your guitarist, she shared a story on your Facebook about the time she slapped Zach De La Roca. I was wondering if you guys could, and the reason why is awesome. I was hoping you guys could share that.
Oh, we'll let her tell it again, because I can't remember it as well. I wouldn't be able to tell it the same way she would.
Okay,
because our Facebook page. I won't.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Facebook, and it says, like, he said, if you ever need a break from your van, we have plenty of room on our tour bus. You're welcome to ride with us any of those nights. And then she slapped him.
He was trying to hit on him. They hit on her.
Right. And at one point on the post, she says, he thought I was offended like he was trying to pick me up. And she wrote, please, I was offended because he was insulting our van. F you, I don't need your goddamn tour bus.
Oh, that's awesome.
I was like, hell yeah.
We were attached to our van.
That was funny because everybody else was on a huge tour bus, and we were on our little van, like cruising along behind them, trying to keep up.
Our little humble van. But you know, the cool thing about being in a van is that you can divert from the route and go to house parties or go check out stuff on the side. If you're on a bus, then you've got a union tour bus driver who's got a set regimen that they have to stay on, mostly. Although our tour manager, Leanne Lewis, did a really, she has the art of persuasion. She once persuaded our bus driver to, on a day off, take us to Lollapalooza in Tennessee, and because we were in a tour bus, she somehow got it situated where we didn't have passes or anything, I don't think, but she's like, well, we're in a tour bus, so we're just going to pull up and park with all the other tour buses. No one's going to notice.
We're with the bands.
That's genius.
Yeah. Just act like you belong there.
Did it work?
Yeah, that was pretty cool. I think that there were some mushrooms involved with that as well. And we saw the Melvins.
Ooh,
and
yeah.
I remember, like, hugging this speaker. We're on the side of the stage. I remember, like, trying to, like, connect all of my molecules in my body to the speaker. And I remember thinking, I get it. They're trying to kill us with music, and I'm ready to die.
I feel like you and I would have hit it off really well back in those days. Because that's, like, I've had those experiences where I remember one time going to a rave of all things, and I'm on a couple of substances at the time. I was, like, 23 at the time. And I wound up just hugging the giant speaker because it was, like, it's connected to me. The vibrations are going through me right now. And it was something about
it. I think the Melvins were another band that were, like, definitely very, you know, unifying for our band. Like, all of us were hugely influenced by the Melvins, as were so many people. And I feel like if you want to think of, like, what band sums up the 90s, it's kind of the Melvins in a way, you know, or at least on one leg of it. I mean, hugely influential.
And the Melvins are so impressive forever because they're, and like Cirrhosis in this way, they're doing it on their terms.
Yeah. I saw Buzz do his, Celine and I got to see Buzz do his acoustic thing here in San Francisco at the Great American, and it was mind-blowing. I mean, it was unbelievable. It was so good. So I feel, they're still hugely influential this much later, and been playing all along, and...
And I think with, like, a band like the Melvins and many bands, I throw you guys as well into that mix, is, like, not only is the music what makes them so powerful, but there is a legacy in a sense, like, I don't know, I always view a band, did they inspire other bands? Like, and you look at, like, the music and can it inspire other people to want to do stuff, and Melvins are definitely right up there on that list. Such an influential band and a very underrated band, too.
Yeah, agreed.
Definitely. And they were really smart about the music industry, and they gave us some good early on advice that I wish we had taken more to heart and followed.
Like what? What'd they say?
About just pitfalls to avoid in terms of dealing with business dealings with larger labels and stuff like that. They just were always very eyes wide open and wise about that stuff, and they counseled us a few times in a friendly manner that I always appreciated.
Did you have a major label really, like, breathing down your neck when you put out Gato Negro? I remember when I first heard it, and I remember the first song, I'm thinking, man, they don't even care that they're on a major label. They're still just giving us that punk vibe. And
we felt like we had a lot of leeway on Atlantic. We felt like no one ever was expressed any kind of expectation for us to change our music or do anything different in any way. I never got that feeling.
That's awesome.
Well, I think that they probably would have wanted us to. I think they were definitely looking for a radio hit, and I think that we were really adamant about writing the way we were writing, and we weren't going to be not only did we not know what that meant or how to do it probably, but we weren't going to, like, try. You know what I mean? We were just still doing what we did, and it was like, if it fit into their machine, then great. Whereas I think that they were probably having trouble figuring out how to promote our record through their sort of more mainstream channels.
But in terms of someone like breathing down our neck, no. They were gracious with us, and it was a really positive experience.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, that's awesome.
One of the first things they did for our band when we signed to Atlantic was a grand personal gesture extended to me. My roommate died while we were on tour, and they knew about it, and they flew me from the tour to her funeral in Buffalo, New York.
Wow.
And then back to rejoin the tour. And I never asked for that. That just was presented to me, like, we'll do this for you. And then they facilitated us getting the Hernandez brothers to do our album cover art.
Right, which was a huge dream for us because we were a huge Love and Rockets fan.
I mean, that was a dream from us, like, in the early days of being in the practice space, barely learning our instruments and writing. Like, wouldn't it be so cool if we could have them do our album cover art? And as soon as we had, like, an art budget on Atlantic Records, and we made that request, and then their person called some people, and, like, boom, they made it happen.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
That was cool.
Oh, it's such a cool album cover, too. That's awesome. I remember seeing them, like, I wish they'd just make it a cartoon, and it's just like, now hearing these stories about the mushrooms and the jet skis, like, what a great animated show. It could be on Adult Swim right now.
You could probably show that now on Adult Swim. We could probably, you know.
Dude, it'd be a huge hit.
And one last thing, I know I don't want to keep you guys and just keep nerding out over every single thing, but like I said, this is such a treat to get to talk to you guys. And obviously with the album coming out on the 16th, the live record, I'm sure I'm not the only person that's going to ask you this question, but is there any idea or a thought or even a flirting with the idea of maybe getting back together and playing some shows or finishing a record, or is there any talks of taking this to another level?
Dun, dun, dun.
I love it.
There's been flirtation, but nothing concrete. Yeah.
Right on. That's cool. That I can imagine that has to pop into your guys' head. Just, you know, I mean, it's such a nostalgic moment to be able to go back and remember some awesome memories that I would imagine that's part of it in the back of your mind, too. Like, hey, it would be kind of fun to jump into a practice space again.
You know, it would have to be, I'm going to just say something personal here. It would have to be as good as that record, and that record's pretty damn good.
It is, yeah. So. The bar has been set very high.
Yeah.
I mean, but you can't practice in Capitol Hill these days. The whole that neighborhood's changed. It's not the same.
Oh, too. Dramatically. I mean, when we go back to Seattle now, it's like, what happened to where do we? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all techno clubs now.
Yeah.
Where are the Misfits?
Right.
They're in Georgetown.
They're in Georgetown now. That's a very good point.
They're in Georgetown. All right. Good to know.
Well, Valerie and Elizabeth, 7-year bitch again. You guys are going to be here on Sunday the 17th for a live interview and signing for the new album Live at Mo, which comes out the day before. And you get it at liveatmo.com and at 7yearbitchrocks.com as well. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for... I mean, to go back to being the teenage version of myself, I couldn't even imagine having the opportunity to speak to you back then. But I speak on behalf of my younger version in thanking you for helping mold what I fell in love with musically. You guys have such a huge impact on my life, and I'll always have nothing but love and respect for what you guys have given us as fans.
Wow, man. Thank you so much.
We salute you.
Yes.
Yes.
We're blushing over here.
And I like that I can say later, bitches, and it's not an insulting thing. Thank you again. I really appreciate it.
Right on, you guys. We hope to see you soon.
Awesome.
Bye.
Take care.
Bye.
Why don't we jump into one of their songs from the live record, since we've been geeking out, or I've been geeking out. Sorry, guys.
No, it's all right. Good, man.
They were awesome.
Yeah, they were so cool.
I didn't know how it would go. I was like, you know, at the worst, I'm going to just tell them how much I love them, and if they're not into
cool
it.
Cool story, bro.
They'll be like, yeah, cool. And I'm like, all right, take care. Enjoy your record. Well, I can listen to those ladies talk all day long, man. Those stories are amazing.
Yeah.
They were
really fun.
And just in the middle of a magical musical time. I mean, I know it sounds being very dramatic in what I say, but it was a very special time for me, I know.
This is like unearthing a time capsule right here. Yeah.
Could you imagine for them? I mean, I can't even imagine. Oh, I hope they do decide to get back together. One show, just do it. Let's check out Deep in the Heart, since I mentioned it. This is the live version. This is definitely a different side compared to what we listened to earlier with The Scratch. So let's check out. This is from that live record. It's called Deep in the Heart. We'll listen to some of it. Would be one where if I had headphones and I ate some mushrooms, I'd be seeing some cool images.
I was just gonna say, I really wish I had a joint or something right now.
Yeah. That bass is just
awesome,
dude. Especially when you listen to it with like strong bass on your stereo speakers, just rattles.
Was it called the bass boost on the old CD players?
Yes. But you had to be picky when you used it, because it took up more battery.
That it did. Like, this is very Melvins-ish.
Yeah. See what I mean? Like, it's like that plodding vibe.
Yeah, I really like this. Me too. It's so dirty. And,
yeah. I can't wait to get this on vinyl, man. As we walked outside that door, I didn't think he'd be so fast. And then he shut the door. He shut the door.
When does this come out?
Next Saturday.
All right, I'm 16. Buying it.
Nice. Yeah,
damn it. In. I'm all in. So good.
So wave goodbye. You know it felt so wrong. I don't know if his heart is breaking or if his heart is gone. Is it gone?
Celine's voice is just so powerful.
Yeah.
Like, a very emotional.
That's what I really like about it. Yeah, you can hear all of it in there.
I got a certain kind of feeling as you stepped outside that door.
You know, while we have a second, let's listen to another track off of it. Just, I want to play it because the opening part is awesome. Apparently, there must have been someone in the crowd that was annoying Celine, or because it just starts with her being like, I want to spit on you. And then I like it because it's like there's a certain, as we've learned by talking to them, there's a great sense of humor underneath this, some dark music. And you get a glimpse of it just from the opening banter before they start this song. So this is Hip Like Junk, which is another one of my favorite 7 Year Bitch songs. So here, let's check a little bit of that out.
I've been wanting to spit on you all night.
Play House of the Rising Sun.
Play House of the Rising Sun. Yeah. Do you think this is like a karaoke or something?
It's amazing that this is just like off the board and it was like on a tape. And they brought, I'm curious. I wonder what it would sound like before they started like trying to.
How much work goes into something like that, you know?
Yeah. Because it sounds so full, and I really love the sound of this record.
Can I pronounce you dead? Can I bounce a rock off your head?
I love how Elizabeth and Valerie lock in on the bass and drums. It's like, there's just such a...
This bass is super fun to listen to with their headphones on. Like, what you were saying earlier, it's just like,
such attitude behind it.
Oh, yeah. With everything, every bit of this song, man.
Mm-hmm. Live at Mo. Get it. Liveatmo.com. You can pre-order it and all that fun stuff. And one last clip I wanted to play. This is just a quick little clip of them having some fun on stage. Now, hearing the interview, I get that the quick wit is awesome. And it's just a quick clip in between the two of their songs. And here, let's check out this fun stage banter with 7 Year Bitch.
So if anyone, I know there's a lot of musicians here tonight. So if anyone's got a short cord in their pocket, I'll take it. Just fling it up here. You know, I know y'all are in bands, right? You guys have it. Someone's got a cord in their pocket. Short cord in your pocket. Yeah, don't be insulted.
You hear the guy in the background? I got a short cord.
Yeah, exactly.
You guys.
All right, let's do our voicemails, our emails, and our text messages.
Yeah. Days when it rains, we sit around and check it out. It's Steve Nicks that brightens up the skies. Listen to the messages.
I'd see him in concert.
All sorts of strange. The words of the voices.
Both of them, yes.
Steve Nicks, staying positive.
We got to get Ziggy to do a 7 Year Bitch inspired version of the messages.
That'd be
intro.
Fun.
Hell yeah.
It's the messages. That's all I got.
Anybody got a short cord out there?
I got one.
Bet you do.
Yeah. All right, Toppy, what do you want us to do?
Let's do texts.
Text messages. It is. Where are they? There they are. 253-271-4787. That's 253-271-4787. You can leave us a voicemail, a text message. Also, you can email us at themigscast@gmail.com.
At Steve.
Or at Steve. Yeah, just write Steve. No even at or anything. It'll get
yell
to me.
Steve.
It's like addressing something Santa Claus. You don't need to give the address. This text says, guys, my grandma was complaining about people that drive with their dogs. I had her quote-unquote vent on the Mixcast line. Oh, I hope you like it. She's 86.
Oh, that'll be great.
We got to get to the voicemails at some point. We might want to just jump and find. I wonder which one it is.
Yeah, we should just find his grandma's. Yeah.
Grandma!
It might be number three.
Let me try.
Just quick.
Yes.
And, yeah.
All right. Let's see.
Yeah. My vent is people who drive with their dogs in their laps. All you hear nowadays is don't talk on your cell phone when you drive. Don't drink coffee when you drive. Why has nobody mentioned don't let your animals on your lap when you drive? I'm thinking that's a really, really big distraction.
It is. Thank you.
I love that.
That's a great one.
He's a grandma. Talk to this voicemail.
Hey, grandma. We got awesome. This line for you.
Sounded pretty good for 86.
Yeah. She sounded great. Her mind's working.
Yeah.
Love it.
Attitude.
Anyone here, do you guys drive?
I drive with my cat on my lap.
How often, though? Your cat's
I'm
probably
kidding.
Not.
I'm kidding. Cats are the worst in cars, by the way.
I don't even think I would ever try that.
I remember bringing when I had a cat, bringing him home when I first got him the kitten. I was like, I'll just put the stupid little kitten in the box and everything will be fine. I'm just driving from Gig Harbor to Tacoma. It should be fine.
Yeah, this will be
easy. No, that cat climbed the seat, went and climbed the other side of the seat. So it was just climbing everywhere.
Doesn't
like,
the box close?
No, it was an open box.
Oh, well, that's
a personal question, guys.
Yeah, right? Jeez. I just gave up that info.
Dude, Lulu will, you know, when I drive, I don't do it too often, but there are times she's difficult to drive with, though. I think about that all the time. I'm like, you know, she's on my lap, and then she freaks out. Like, she likes to yell at cars when they're moving. Like anything with wheels. Like if you're on a skateboard and we're in a dog park, she will snap. If you're a baby carriage, she will snap. If you're on a bicycle, she will snap. If you're just walking, she's fine. Cars on next level snapping.
Done.
So she sees, obviously, you're driving, there are other cars going the other way. She's, you know, she's 7 pounds, and she's jumping at the window wanting to get out. Like one time,
dude, that's dangerous, man.
Now I don't drive with the window open. Like,
one dog is gonna fly out,
dude. I caught her, and like she jumped, and I had to grab her. Whoa. Like I'm like, what are you? Where do you think this? How do you think this is going to end, Lulu? She didn't answer me because she's a dog. But yeah. I was like, what do you think? You jump out of this moving vehicle to attack another moving vehicle, you will lose.
Yeah, and on every aspect.
Oh man. Toppy, do you ever drive with your... Because you got two little dogs, too.
Yeah, they're with us a lot, but it's usually not a problem unless there's only one of us, being me, because I don't know what she does when she's by herself, but... I prefer to have the carrier so I can put them in the carrier, but there are times when I don't if I'm coming back from the in-laws who watched them, and they're both in my laps. Yeah. And the worst part is if I'm in Big Brother, because it's a stick.
Big Brother's a 1967
Camaro, but it's a 4-speed, and there's a lot different technique than driving a stupid automatic. So I'm trying to hold the dog, I'm trying to shift, I'm just like
trying to eat my French fries. And what an awful way to die!
Right. Eat a whole meatball sub. Yeah.
Man dies by being distracted by his chihuahuas.
Dude, they just did a news report on this. I think last night, like I was watching it on like Como or Cairo, and they're talking about how people drive around with their dogs on their lap.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you, both of you have kind of small dogs, but they're showing this article, and this chick, it wasn't a giant dog, but it was bigger than both of yours. I couldn't see someone doing it with, like, a St. Bernard or something stupid like that. But, like, the dog was a medium to small size, but it was everywhere, just up in your business, licking your face. It's like, how can you drive with this dog doing all of that stuff. It's worse than a cell phone.
My father-in-law's dog, Trixie, she puts her paws on the steering wheel and drives with him.
It's like Toonses.
It's hilarious. My wife
was doing that when I was like four.
Sid's hilarious when she's driving with Lulu, and if she like drives by a cop, it's like she's like the only time where she feels like she's breaking the law. She's like, Lulu, get down. She's like trying to push Lulu down.
So right.
Because I've never seen a cop pull over anybody. I've never been pulled over for having a dog in
I've
my
never
lap.
Heard of it.
But I mean, I would imagine that it's. I mean, it's a distracted driver.
And yeah. I bet it would be. But also, I mean, like Seattle or even Washington such a dog like state.
They might attack the cops. It might be like.
Oh no! I was just gonna say that they wouldn't even bother with it because they're like, oh, it's just a dog, whatever.
Yeah.
Like unless you're doing something else, like if you're swerving all over the place, then they're gonna be like, well, what's wrong with you? Are you drunk driving? No, I'm dog driving.
I'm dog driving.
Don't worry about it.
Next text message. What's up, Steve? Hey, Tope.
Hey.
Hola, Rev. Hi, Nick. And he spelled hi, H-I-G-H, of course.
What up?
It's Dirty Dan here.
What up?
Just saying Happy New Year, and I hope everybody had a great holiday break. I'm still listening to the old podcast. I'm up to the beginning of 2012.
Oh, my God.
I wonder how that went. I wish I would have known about these podcasts years ago because I feel like I missed out on a ton of parties and events. Laser.
Hey, sir.
Laser.
So I was wondering when your next listener party will be. I'd love to finally meet you guys and all of my fellow douches. Stay
it was
positive.
Yesterday, man.
Yeah, dude.
You missed it.
We had a huge laser tag party.
Such a huge one.
I mean, 7-year bitch reunited and played it. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, then they shot everyone with lasers.
Yeah, man. It was great. Virtual sports. They had the band set up. Eddie Vedder was there. He was drinking and filming it.
Sure. Riding his skateboard.
Yep. Everything. Everything.
Then everyone slipped on the skate ramp.
You missed it. Sorry. Sorry, Dirty Dan. Maybe you need. Maybe you should start listening to the new podcast.
Maybe you should go backwards. Like,
I think they were addressing him. He won't get to this one until 3 years from now.
That's a good point.
That is a great point.
Yeah.
Like, I hope he drives truck or something so he can just listen to, like...
Power through these.
Yeah, just get through them.
We had to do something soon. Hopefully at virtual sports or something.
I'm
really
down
ball.
For going back to virtual sports.
I know, virtual
I
sports is
it,
such
man.
A fun spot. It's easy to get to.
From for everyone, really.
I know it's a little bit of a drive for the North End people, but it's nice to go somewhere where there's parking. We know that those guys will take care of us.
There's a lot of parking. That's a really good part about it.
Next text. Hey, guys, I'm going to be on Evening Magazine on Wednesday for donating hair to cancer... Kids with Cancer. I donated to Locks of Love.
Cool.
Maybe can I get a shout out, or at least can you watch the show? Your close neighbor, Dwayne, love the Migs cast.
Cool. All right, yeah, dude, Union Magazine on Wednesday.
Dude, that's really, really, and he sent a picture of his hair. And
that's a lot of hair, yeah, because I tried to donate mine a few years ago when I had longer hair, and they wouldn't take it.
They're like, pubic hair is not allowed.
Well, that and the whole pot thing, you know?
Yeah, they don't want kids with THC hair.
Really?
I don't know, but... It just wasn't long enough.
Yeah, they just profiled him when he walked in the door. Oh, no.
All right, stoner, we don't need your weed hair thing. Go weave hemp baskets with it.
Okay.
Next text.
Will I get high?
Possibly.
Yeah. No, I won't.
Steve, that was the party at the town in Tacoma. I'm sorry I missed it. I love the Snoop Dogg podcast. That was a fun journey to disappointment. Ha ha.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot all about that.
Yeah, two weeks ago,
was
it?
Yeah, I heard the story from Ted.
Yeah. Did you hear from...
I didn't hear the podcast. I heard the story from Ted.
Well, we went there expecting to interview Snoop Dogg, and let's just say the interview never happened.
We saw him.
We saw him. He walked right by us.
Yeah,
oh, really?
Times.
Oh, here. Real quick, we'll explain what happened.
I saw Taryn took a picture with him.
Yeah, that's great.
That was a different place. That was a different one.
Yeah, that was a different place. And apparently, if I would have waited in line with everybody else that was trying to get pictures, we would have gotten a picture.
Yeah.
But the way it was all set up, and it's no fault of Clear Choice Cannabis or Levi Lyon. It was,
none, yeah.
I mean, all blame on Snoop and his people, and not even on Snoop.
Which
more,
was awesome.
Yeah, it was great.
It was great to commentate
everything about
on.
Dude, it was a lot of fun. The journey to try and get this interview was fun because we met a lot of really cool people along the way, some people that are doing some cool stuff that shines a good light on the pot world. But so we get there. We're all set up to do the interview. They have a table set up for Snoop. They got a King's Castle throne kind of thing going on where Snoop was going to sit. It was so we got there. We set up our microphones. Everything was good. In walks Snoop's security, right? Snoop's main, one of his main, it wasn't even a security guy I found out. It was like his
cousin?
Promoter.
Part of his entourage.
It's part of his entourage.
Yep.
This guy walks in. He looks like Terrence Howard from Hustle and Flow. Like
awesome.
Straight up old school, full red velour tracksuit.
Sure, why not?
With a jacket over it with the fuzzy hood.
Yeah.
Draped over like Santa Claus.
Draped over his shoulders like a cape. Like not even wearing that.
And just gold everywhere.
Gold everywhere. While he walks in and never stops doing it for the entire time, and Nick noticed it before I did. Nick, what was he doing?
He was rubbing his belly with both of his hands. He's just like
Well, dude, if you're wearing a suit like that, man, I'd be touching myself all the time, too. Can't help it.
He's just rubbing his belly.
This feels good.
He looks around. He's like telling him, okay, we need this. We do that. We don't want this. And then he looks at Nick and I, who are sitting there waiting to talk to Snoop. Because that's how Levi set it all up. Everyone,
yeah.
Clear choice, great spot. He looks at it and goes, who the hell are those guys? Talk about going from excitement to terror in 2 seconds.
Yeah, because you're suddenly looking at a guy rubbing his belly in a red velour suit saying, I don't know who you are, and I'm not in a good mood.
And he's apparently not the only one of Snoop's entourage now that has showed up. I mean, he's got a full security crew, and they're big boys. And now they're all looking at us, and we're like, they're like, who the hell are these guys? And I'm like, hi, I'm Steve. I'm going to do an interview. Not right now, you are.
No.
Oh, jeez.
Move your stuff over there. Right, you can try and get your interview later.
So he's like, yeah, we'll do the interview later. So we get up and leave our microphones, because it took a bit to get it all out, hook it up. And he goes, take your ass with you.
Wow.
Not happening.
All right, then, well.
Not happening. Yeah. So now we
nice
wait.
Effort.
And the way they had it is they had all the people that came. They were going to get to do the autographs with
the custies.
The customers that were waiting in line in the snow at the time.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
So they go through that. Then they close the doors. And the plan was then everybody who was like friends and family, quote unquote, VIPs, were then going to get a meet and greet with Snoop to do pictures. And after that, then we were going to do the interview.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then as we're waiting with everybody else, we watch Snoop Talk just leave the club or then leave the Clear Choice Cannabis.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I look at Nick and he's like, I think he's gone. And me being naive Steve is like,
oh no, maybe.
Oh, maybe he's going out for a smoke break.
Yeah.
In the pot shop.
It's plausible.
Could be.
You can't smoke in the shop.
That is a good point.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Well, he never came back. He left and went to Bellingham, where eventually Taryn got a picture with him.
Oh.
Yeah.
Not even in the same place.
So,
okay.
It was unfortunate for all those that worked really hard behind the scenes. I mean, not even take us out of the equation. There were a lot of people who invested some time, money. I mean, to put it in perspective, the owner of Clear Choice, who spent a lot of money to bring him there, barely got to meet him. Levi didn't get to meet him.
That's awkward.
So it was just like, you know, it's like it was no fault of anyone other than this is Snoop's people who I am not going to step in front of the velour belly rubber and tell him, no, you do not leave until we get our interview.
That guy has the plan.
So it never happened. But it was a fun experience. We had a good time. And they gave us some nice gift bags.
Yeah.
Nick got taken care of nicely.
Nice.
It was awesome. It was a great Christmas.
How much of it do you remember?
A green Christmas.
Much. There you go.
As far as the party at the town, I was there to host the party.
Oh, yeah.
And this is the first.
Who is this guy?
Everything was great. This is the first time it's ever happened to me. Levi, our buddy from Lion Pride Music, and they've got the party buses, so they sent a party bus to pick me up, so I didn't have to drive.
Attaboy.
So nice. When Steve does not drive, Steve gets wasted.
Mm-hmm.
So Steve was hosting a party that he eventually got kicked out of because he was too drunk.
Whoa.
You got kicked out of your own party?
Yes, I did.
What party is this?
That you were hosting?
The party at the town.
Am I missing something? Was that one that's down here?
On 6th Ave in Tacoma.
Oh, okay.
Remember I said I was going to do it the day after Christmas.
That's right. I'm sorry.
And I deserved to get kicked out because I was puking plenty in the bathroom.
Oh.
Wow.
Oh, no. Steve, wow.
Here's why. Besides alcohol. There's a couple other reasons.
A gift bag?
And I had nothing to do with that. So, I should find it because I want to give props to the band, a bunch of cool guys I met. So I did the initial stage announcement with my buddy Grizz, who was the big guy that did security over at the Snoop Dogg thing.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Super nice guy.
He's an imposing presence.
Yeah, he's a big boy. And he did a great job keeping order at that at the Snoop Dogg event.
Yeah.
He helped out Levi.
Hey, yo, we're done. Get out of here!
Yeah. Which, you know what? Sometimes you need someone to do that.
Yeah. Goodbye.
So, Steve, I think Snoop left.
So I want to give props. I believe it was Corson Swift was the band. And they were doing a bunch of covers. And a couple of them, one of them's a Titanic douche. And they said, hey, Steve, do you want to play drums with us on a song or two? And I'm like, yeah, sure. At any point, let me know.
What are you playing?
Right. Well, they're playing. And I'm watching them playing. They're doing like Foo Fighters, Weezer. And I'm like, okay, they're playing some cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're jamming out the Tool.
Yes.
Right? And I've had a couple shots. I'm fine at this point, but I'm feeling good. I'm hugging people.
Just
having
feeling
a good
like
time.
Danny Carey.
Yeah. There you go.
So there's the breakdown in one of the, I can't remember which song it was. I think it was Sober.
Okay.
And there's a breakdown, and the band, the drummer, I'm like on the side. I don't know. At some point, I don't know how I ended up on the stage.
alcohol.
The drummer and the guitarist, they look at me and they go, "You want to finish the song?" Like, you bet your ass I want to finish the song.
Yes.
So now I'm like, yeah, I'm rocking out. My buddy J-Mac, he's now on stage, just standing right near me, just jamming too. And this band, they're the coolest bunch of guys. They're all having fun. We're all having a blast. And they're really good. Like, they were great. And then they're like, "Hey, do you want to stick up on stage?" Speaking of Rage Against the Machine, like, "Do you know Killing in the Name of?" I've never played the song before in my life, but of course I look at him and go, "You bet your ass I know that song." Played the whole song. I thought I played it just amazing. I watched the video back. I apologize to them.
Oh, no.
It wasn't bad, but like
But in your head, it was like 1,000 times better.
I was playing a little too fast,
huh?
And it wasn't like it was passable. They were great. They locked in with me. I'm sorry that I sped you guys up a little bit, but I was
turned
jacked.
Up the RPM.
I was jacked. So I get off the stage, now adrenaline.
Yeah, because right? I've seen you play. You get into that mode where you're just,
It's on, I'll have to put it, it's on the Steve Miggs like page. If you go on there on the post by others, it's been posted, the video. But the minute I get off the stage, there's a handful of people who wanted to give me shots.
Shot.
So I probably did 4 straight shots. Shot. Right?
All tequila.
And no.
Oof.
Tequila.
Yeah, what were you drinking?
Fireball. Jaeger.
There we go.
And Crown.
Oh.
Those are 4 of my favorite things.
I've done something along those lines before, and it did not end well.
Did you hurl violently in the bathroom after that? Because I did.
Did you get kicked out of your own party?
No.
None of those things quite that bad. No.
I don't remember much other than Jay carrying me out of the bathroom.
Wow.
And I'm hearing, I don't see it because I'm just eyes are closed, and I hear the guy going, "He can't be in here anymore."
Yeah.
And I do remember this very clearly. I go, "He is right," because my buddy was like, "No, he'll be fine. He's hosting. He'll be fine." And I go, "He is right. I should not be in here, and I'm sorry."
Oh, that's awesome.
At least you had enough like coherence. Yeah, just be like, "This man is correct. Time to go home."
I'm not an arguing guy. When I'm done, like, I'm not going to try and pick a fight. I'm aware. I am a mess. The shots and the adrenaline really did not work well to my favor, because I was trying to figure it out. Like, even my buddy Jay's like, "Did someone slip something in your drink? Like, I've never seen you that in bad shape." Like, and it's true. I don't usually. Not driving also helped a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
But, man, so I just spent the rest of the time on the bus drinking Coors Light and having a blast.
Man, see, like, this week, like, this Christmas break was also the first time in maybe years that I've puked from partying.
Right.
Because it was the same thing. It was
amateur hour.
Right. Well, I went to 2 different parties.
It's the season.
I went to 2 different parties, and we got an Uber. So it was an Uber to go to the first party, which is just a house party, birthday party.
Right.
Drank way too much there, and then went to the second party and had 1 drink that I couldn't finish because I knew it was over. But yeah, it was like I haven't puked in that, like, in years. Oh.
I went nuts.
It's
fun, huh?
I'm glad that I drive everywhere, I'm responsible.
Yeah.
I'm very responsible when it comes to that. And if I was not a driver, I would be just a terrible sloshy drunk. Like, it's like that when we go to our conventions. if I'm not driving, I'm getting bombed.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, because every other time I'm always thinking, I'm not going to drive drunk. I'm not going to be stupid. And, you know, I'm driving everywhere because I live in Puyallup. It's not that easy just to. But when Levi's hooking me up with a party bus to take. Like, apparently Jay's brother was there. I don't even remember seeing him. And he was taking care of me for a little
nice
while.
Long conversation.
At one point, they were like trying to send me home. And then I hear Levi. He's like, "Bro, he's fine. Just get him some water." And I'm like, "He's right. I just need some water."
He's right.
Yeah, we can do this.
But man, it was a good time. Thanks to Levi for everything that he did. And I'm sorry that I got kicked out of the party I was supposed to host. But I was there in spirit outside.
Nice.
Drinking Coors Light.
You know what? I think we got to get. I got to get rolling. Got some meetings to get into. So why don't we just trying to think if I got anything else I want to do. I think that's good. You guys good?
Yeah.
That was fun.
That was a lot of fun. Yeah. 7-year bitch was awesome,
dude.
So cool.
So awesome.
I'm getting a live album next week.
I know.
Week,
look at 2 that.
Weeks from now.
Dude, you and me both. I might just pre-order it now. That way I'm locked in. Because they said it's limited edition.
Okay, and I need the vinyl.
Yep. Yeah, liveatmo.com to go buy it. So go do that. So yeah, huge, huge, huge thanks to Valerie and Elizabeth from 7-Year Bitch. The bitches were awesome.
Mm-hmm.
What's up, bitches?
What's up, bitches? Later, bitches.
What's up, bitches? God. I love that they refer to themselves as the bitches.
Yeah.
Hanging out with the bitches. And if you have an opportunity, go see them for their live interview. And hey, if this was any indication, you're going to hear some great stories.
It'll be a treat.
Live interview. Also, they'll be signing the record, and that's on Sunday in the afternoon around 2-ish on the 17th at the EMP. And it's free, and it's all ages. So go down there and go hang out. For Top Shelf, for The Rev, mm-hmm. for Mono Nick, next week, I think we're going to be talking to Charlotte Flair, Ric Flair's daughter from the WWE, the Divas Champ.
Nice.
So that should be fun. Stay positive. We'll talk to you next week.